Fremd vertraut, der Podcast der Evangelischen Akademie zu internationaler Politik, Dialog und Vielfalt. Welcome to our show once again from Fremd vertraut. I have a guest from Lithuania. Would you be so kind as to introduce yourself, first of all?
I am Irmina Matonytė, professor of political science in Jonas Žemaitis Military Academy of Lithuania, where I teach bachelor, master and PhD level students and do some research.
Thank you very much. It's nice that you are here and talk to our audiences. My first question is about Lithuania itself, the politics of Lithuania. Why is Lithuania so much engaged in this struggle against Russia, why it has a clear stand for Ukraine in this war?
We call it, it's our war, just Ukrainians are fighting it for us, because we perceive it as an act of Russian imperialism, aggressive imperialism, which happened. It was very clearly calculated against Kiev. But the same logic would apply to Baltic countries or to Poland, because the analysis of Russian strategic thought since the last 10 years or more shows that these ideas of new imperialism are very strong with the Russian world, with this Ruski Mir idea expanding, and autocratization in Kremlin leads very clearly to this phenomenon. So we Lithuanian political elites across all political board, with practically no exceptions except perhaps for some strange political personalities who are not vocal at all in the public space, we support Ukraine. I think that we shouldn't call it we fight against Russia. We fight for democracy and autonomy, sovereignty of Ukraine. And we support Ukraine with military assistance, perhaps not directly with weapons, also civil society initiatives and support, and the very big number of refugees of war now living in Lithuania. And perhaps you now visited Vilnius and you hear quite a bit of Russian language, which is a bit different. I can now differentiate Russian spoken by Ukrainians. It's a bit different pronunciation, and it's Lithuania is very hospitable to these people who had to flee their country.
But Lithuania is a very small country, and nevertheless, it's speaking out its mind and taking a real stand for Ukraine, and maybe it could be also even considered to be one of the strongest supporters of Ukraine within the EU. Why is that?
Yes, Lithuania, as it's already since a few years, is punching above its weight, as we say, a small state. But from international politics, we know that the size is important, but is not necessarily decisive in international relations. So Lithuania, with 3 million of inhabitants, is doing its best. Again, it's not about numbers, population size, but about willingness to contribute and to speak up for the, we could say, right thing. Here, as a political scientist doing a little bit of research on political elites in the country, perhaps I should say that fortunately we have a very strong politicians in terms of authority and political competences in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Gabrielius Landsbergis, and in the Ministry of Defense, Arvydas Anušauskas. Our Minister for Foreign Affairs, Gabrielius Landsbergis, perhaps for the audience, it might be interesting that he is the grandson of Vytautas Landsbergis, who is de facto the first leader of the country, the president of the country after 1990. His grandson now is leading the Foreign Affairs Ministry. with a very clear strategic thinking. He is by educated as a political scientist in Lithuania, and then he had education in Western Europe or in general in Europe, and served in the European Parliament and then in the Lithuanian Parliament. But now he is in the ministry and leads not only the Lithuanian diplomatic corps, but contributes very clearly, very efficiently to international discussions and defends the Ukrainian cause. The Minister of Defense, Lithuania is a parliamentary democracy, so the minister is also a deputy in the Seimas, and he has very strong positions from the Conservative Party, trained as historian. Working, he's a civilian, of course, person, a minister. He wrote several books on Lithuanian dissident movement and Forest Brother War during the 50s, 60s in Lithuania. So he has a very strong reputation among the military personnel, too. To wrap up this point, we, again, Lithuania, a small country, very dedicated, understanding or sharing this grief of Ukraine, also has this fortunate combination of political elites and these strong personalities in key ministerial positions. Of course, not to mention that our prime minister is Ingrida Shimonite, is also very, very transparent and very strong in her understanding and in her public statements concerning Ukraine, and also the president.
On the other hand, I read that many Lithuanians really fear that Russia could invade the country. And in the consequence, many people buy weapons and are thinking of supporting the military, not even when they decide to be a member of the army, but also to be member of militias and so on. So how would you interpret that?
Yes, your impression or your information is correct. Lithuania and Lithuanians, all people who live in Lithuania, Poles and Russian population, Russian minority included, are afraid. We were thinking in 2020, in February, that in some days Russian troops will also invade. They could not manage with Kiev. They might write perhaps an easier target like Vilnius. And this fear, as I told in the beginning, is grounded in not some imagination. It's grounded on analysis, on observation of Russia's strategic thoughts and of political actions and changes in their inner discussions, and also revelations among Russian opposition leaders. So Lithuanians are very clearly concerned, as Latvians and Estonians too, about this imminent Russian imperialism and possible attacks against our countries. Buying guns, it's not as easy as, brave Lithuanians would like to do. It's not as easy to acquire a gun in the country. But yes, indeed, after the first days of Russian war against Ukraine in early March 22, there were discussions and there were changes in legislation regarding the volunteer soldiers and the ability permissions to acquire guns, also extending the right to keep arms in your own domicile, in the household, for also hunters. We in Lithuania, people are realists. The war is fought on the battlefield and with guns. And this willingness to have guns for self-defense and for defense of the country is, we can say, quite logical. Of course, there are these issues. To have a gun is not enough. You have to be trained. This militia or volunteer, we call rifle association, sees a very huge influx of people who want to join and to train themselves during weekends. And it's not only young men, but also women and also professional people, some of public intellectuals and media celebrities who enrolled into these riflemen's activities. Not as fundraisers, not only as public advocates, but also as future military people who are competent military to act on the battlefield. And perhaps I can add also on this, yeah, in terms of like philosophy or attitudes toward the world, Lithuania is a Catholic country. We cherish human life very much, and perhaps I can elaborate on that further. But the idea, understanding that, yeah, war is war, and it is fought with guns. And Lithuania had several fundraisers for lethal weapons, acquisition of lethal weapons. The first one big successful story was a fundraiser which generated millions for Bayraktars. For me, it was not an issue to send money for weapons, but for some more philosophically minded or people, it was a moral dilemma to start contributing not only with goodwill, civil support, but also to understanding that we should send money to buy weapons or to contribute to this military. And I think that most of us Lithuanians made this question, decided on this. Yeah, militarization is the right thing, not this seemingly peaceful attempts to try to somehow calm down this war, which is full scale and evident.
In Germany, the population is quite divided into two parts, almost of the same size, that one is saying, yes, we should support, but the other side is saying, no, we shouldn't, because that is a real danger also for us. And some, and most of them even, are Christians. And also in my church, there are many, many members of our church who really completely are against delivering weapons to Ukraine, because they say it's not God's will that we should kill other people. I had personally a big argument with them, because I'm not a theologist and not a priest, but I'm a political analyst. And I told them, no, I think there is no alternative, to be realistic. But what would you say to those people who have this kind of pacifistic approach?
I'm not a theologist either, so I cannot build on theological arguments, if there are any theological arguments which would support this approach to the war. But in my understanding, it's more not a theological argument, but the German political history, which is behind this sense of hesitation of German nation. And if to like simplify and to really connect to your argument, the Protestantism in Germany was during the Second World War. It also existed, but somehow it didn't help. The idea of non-armed, I don't have to elaborate on this argument, which lacks like inner, perhaps, logics. But on this more philosophical side, perhaps the question is about a danger of nuclear response if Ukraine is too successful, if the West provides what it has to provide to Ukraine, which is fighting not against Russians who came there by accident with no grand plan. Russian grand plan is to change the international world order. And it's not just to attack and to take a piece of Ukraine or the territory of Ukraine. The ideas of Putin, who is not a very grand strategist, but who is very clear in his ambition, is to change the world order. So if West contributes with what it has to contribute to Ukraine, and Ukraine, as I told, might be considered as too successful, then there is this red button on nuclear possibility of the nuclear attack, which might be used by Russians. And then fears of escalation or this nuclear threat is understood. It's not a big discovery that it's on the mind of American strategists or French European strategists, this nuclear option, which perhaps partially explains why the West is not so straightforward and with intensive support to Ukraine with military equipment.
Of course, that's an issue also in the German discussions, but let's leave maybe that discussion a little bit aside and come to another question, which I find crucial also for the whole discussion which is going on. Do you really think that it is realistic that Russia would attack also Lithuania or any other Baltic or West country which is a member of the NATO? Would you really believe that they would risk such a war, which easily would be then the first step of the next world war?
First of all, I would say that Russia is already attacking. Hybrid threats, not every day, but cyber attacks and other hybrid invented challenges we are facing, we, Baltic countries, Poland, and also the Great Britain.
And also Germany.
So if we think of a war in terms as it is considered war in contemporary, in this modern or postmodern terms, we are already at war with Russia. Concerning the conventional war, phase of war, this military attack, full scale, it depends. But as of today, is more optimistic than it was like more than a year ago. I would say now that Russia wouldn't launch an overt military attack against either of European Union countries or NATO countries, we perhaps should rather think in terms of NATO this year or in the coming year. But I would give just like a 3-year perspective. And then we don't know how these things evolve in Ukraine and how things evolve in Russia. To answer your question, it is not much realistic that during the upcoming 36 months, Russia would launch military attack against NATO, any NATO country, which would then mean this activation of this fifth clause. I cannot guarantee for more than 3 years.
Why 3 years?
Like to speculate. So we have to set some timeline. So again, I think now we see the war in Ukraine, this war of attrition. And Russian military capabilities are not exhausted. They are far from being exhausted, but there are less capabilities and less perhaps political will and imagination to engage into another conflict line as they have this Ukrainian battlefield to stay on or to fight on. So, and the war clearly, with the most successful counterattack in winter or in spring next year, the war will not end as it should end in a matter of a year or two. So I give 3 years.
But do you think it is realistic that Ukraine can win this war?
Hope is not realistic, and justice is not realistic, and perhaps even principles of international order or values are not realistic. But that's how we, as of today, we frame our thinking as political scientists or strategists in international community. Which this part of international community, which uses the rationality and arguments, I cannot say what is in the head of leaders of Putin's type.
Suppose Ukraine would win the war and Russia would lose. What will happen then?
How would you call it? Peace accords would be signed. Russia would return territories, would pay reparations. Then the international community will engage into restoration, reconstruction of the devastated country, which is Ukraine.
What would happen to Russia itself?
I don't know. It is manageable for even these current leaders of Russia to say that, okay, we lost and we retreat and stay in power and keep the country as in the shape it is, with perhaps more deterioration of social economic situation for most of people who live there, and perhaps some extremism, some nationalism growing, emerging in bigger proportions in Russia, but still to keep it in the shape it is now. But for that, the clear and strong political communication, Putin should be able to somehow acknowledge his failure, which is perhaps realistic.
You believe that Putin would be able to do so?
I still hope that a human being is able of acknowledging his wrong deeds or sins.
Wouldn't it mean, on the other hand, that he, when he lost the war, wouldn't he be then also still credible as a leader, as a political leader in Russia?
The issue is that Russia is not democracy. It's not after the Second World War, Churchill. There will be no need to re-elect him or reappoint, and public opinion in this propagandistic country doesn't matter since long time already. So it depends only on the will of this man only. But of course, there are still we are mortal. All human beings are mortal. But this scenario would be perhaps too optimistic, although it is the most perhaps rational. But more realistically, perhaps Russia will decompose as a federation, at least. It might lose local leaders I learned a new word, mutiny, this strange smuta. These times when it's not very clear who is in charge of what and which region. And so perhaps that would be a more realistic outcome of the loss of war of Russia. I cannot admit the contrary scenario. I am sorry, I will not talk of the probability of Ukraine losing the war and Russia taking the Ukrainian territories. That's beyond my imagination and moral options.
Let's maybe focus on the migration, which has become a major impact of the war, that refugees from Ukraine, but not only from Ukraine, we had also the Belarusian revolution, which failed, and many people from Belarus and Ukraine, but also from other countries, came to Lithuania, especially to Lithuania. Why is that?
From people from Belarus, it's a neighboring country. So it's Poland or Lithuania, it's quite an evident choice. First of all, physical proximity. Very strong historical explanation is behind, dating to, we can say, Middle Ages. We had a state which was called Grand Duchy of Lithuania, or then it evolved in different shapes and formats. But unity or this brother relations or sister relations with what now is Lithuanian nation or Belarusian nation or Ukrainian nations date from these times. That's like a very deep historical reason. And in German, there is a word, Gesellschaft, the common destiny of living in the same area and having similar...
Gemeinsamer Kulturraum.
Perhaps. So these are like deep, deep historical roots and physical proximity. And then again, the third layer, which is very important, is political elite or civil society level. Lithuanian political elites and civil society at large is very hospitable to Belarusian or Ukrainian people. We share their concerns, European values and willingness to fight for democracy and to make sacrifices for it. I remember manifestations and street demonstrations after Maidan 2014. And then this, when the war started, this Crimean occupation in Vilnius and Kaunas and in smaller cities in Lithuania. So this sense of European nation, the need to support European friends and brothers and sisters who share similar values to us and who want to get rid of paternalism and these traditions which are not compatible with liberal order or values which are common in European space. And our political elites support. And not only political national elites, national level, but also on the city level, municipal level elites like mayors and councils in Lithuania and in Poland and in Latvia too. But to speak only of Lithuania, so on all levels there is the sense of solidarity and invitation and support. You cannot hear on Lithuanian in Vilnius in public transport. And I asked my Ukrainian friends if it is still valid. And it is still valid. When Ukrainians came to Vilnius, public transport was made free for them. And there were announcements, constant announcements. Instead of announcing the next bus stop, there was a phrase, and only in Ukrainian, that the public transport for Ukrainians is free of charge. For many of us, Lithuanians was the first massive encounter with Ukrainian language in the public space.
Now there is, I think, approximately almost 2,000 NATO troops in the country. 1,600 something, I read. And the German government, the German defense minister, Pistorius, he announced that further 4,000 German troops would come to the country. How do you evaluate that?
They are welcome. They are very much welcome. It's about this German brigade, I think, the issue is. And there were some misunderstandings on German political level and Lithuanian politicians who interpreted a little bit differently how many and how fast this brigade will be formed, first of all, in Germany, because in Germany, military troops are perhaps, sorry to say, but are not as on this alert level as in Lithuania. So not...
That's true.
not ready like to move the next day to another country, which is still NATO space. Now it seems that these tensions or misunderstandings are overcome, but the issue is on both sides. For Germany is to organize like personnel and to prepare them and to motivate them. And for Lithuania is to develop logistics and these capacities for such a big number of professional armed personnel to live on regular basis in the country. It's not a short-term mission. It would be a long-term mission. For an individual military person, it would be for 9 months. But this brigade will be stationed for indefinite times. If your question was dating to the Second World War, Lithuanians have some stereotypical ideas or fears of Germany and German soldiers on our soil, that they would take our Klaipėda or Memel back. I don't think that it is on the agenda, even in the most imaginative, conspiracy-minded people's minds.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
For me as well.